everybody. My name is Stephanie Butler, and I am a grateful member of Avalon. Oh, I love it. My home group today, we have been hybrid for a while. And so, but we're in a church service in a church facility, and their Wi-Fi just doesn't work. So we did, I just really enjoyed watching y'all get this working tonight, because we started our meeting and then we lost them and then they lost us. And so we were in person, but they were online. It was just a mess. And then somebody said, does anybody have a hotspot? We need a hotspot. So then we all tried to figure out how to get a hotspot. It was really, but you know what? I'm so grateful. We did have a meeting. And we did get to share. And y'all are going to have a meeting tonight, too. And you did. Congratulations to all the birthday folks. Anytime we get one, you know, just being in this fellowship has just brought me so much joy. And tonight, I am really grateful. I live in a little town called Granite Shoals, which is about an hour west of Austin. We have had over 30 days of temperatures over 100 degrees. We have not had any rain at my house in almost 60 days. And guess what? It rained last night. And I am telling you, I think those of you in California will understand, because y'all aren't having any rain either. But I practically wanted to run in it. You know, it changed my attitude. I woke up happy and I feel lighter. And, you know, and then right before the meeting, thunder and lightning again. And I want to celebrate. I know, you know, all of the weather all over the world has been cattywampus. And so we've had to learn acceptance and gratitude for what we do have. And then, but when something like this, it's like I was just walking. I live on a lake. You'll hear about that in a minute, but I live on a lake. And so the lightning and the thunder rolling across this lake was just beautiful. And I just walked up and down this porch going, oh my God, thank you, God. Thank you, God. And then I thought, oh, wait, I got to go to a meeting. And so I'm really grateful to be here tonight. And thank you, Leonard, for the invitation. I appreciate you being a speaker seeker. And I'm very humbled. I mean, I know we all have a story. Everybody has a story. And I think that some of us have been given a gift of gab, which, you know, my sponsor today says, Stephanie, it's not all about you. But, you know, sometimes I think it is. So I would like to share with you tonight a little bit about my story and how I got to be here. And so what I'm going to do is, I walked into my first Al-Anon meeting, July the 24th of 1985. Now, the way I showed up, I was desperate. I was scared. One of the girls in the meeting today talked about being broken. I was broken. And I did, but you know, the other thing that I was ignorant. Now, I want to tell you, that was the biggest piece of my showing up. I walk into that room and y'all tell me that alcoholism is a family disease. I didn't even know it was a disease. I had been trying to control a disease for 19 years. So I'm going to tell you how all this started. I did not grow up in an alcoholic home. I'm 77 years old. I was born in Midland, Texas. Shortly after I was born, we moved to San Antonio, and that's where I grew up. My parents were social drinkers. They would have a party every once in a while and have some, cocktails or whatever you call that stuff. But I'm Italian, and so we do have wine, and we drink wine with the Italian things. But there's something you need for me. I'm a Catholic Italian. And I was an untreated Al-Anon. And so I would tell you that if you knew me, you would want to run the other way. I was controlling and I was a manipulative and all the things that happens to us. But you know what, when I showed up and y'all told me it was a family disease and I knew that my parents were not alcoholic, I couldn't understand it. And then you told me that it was generational. And so what I found out is that my mother was raised in an alcoholic home. Her daddy was a bootlegger. And so my mother was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. And so I was raised by an untreated Al-Anon. And some, oh, wait, I have to set my timer. Oh, my gosh, wait, we'll be here all night. Hold on a second. I got it started, and then I forgot to push the button. Okay, well, I hope I remember what that means. So what happened was that I was taught some things. I was taught that if you do good, you get good. So I was a very good girl because I was scared of making a mistake. I looked at you and your outsides looked so put together and my insides felt so weak. I felt less than. But the biggest thing that I have to tell you about my family of origin was that we were always fine. How are you? We are fine. Fine. Thank you very much. We're fine. My mother had a sign in the front yard that said, "We are fine. Thank you very much." And I have to tell you, the reason I'm telling you that is because my parents, I never saw my parents argue. One time in the 18 years I lived at home, I saw my mama get mad at my daddy. She cried, walked out, slammed the door, got in the car, and drove away. The lesson I learned as a young person was when people get angry, they leave. So at a very early age, I became so afraid of people being angry. So my people pleasing was put in place before I ever even met my husband. It came from this family of origin, and there was not alcoholism, but there were a lot of isms, you know, because my mama was raised in an alcoholic home. So when I went to high school, I met the man that I fell in love with. His name is Bill. We dated for 4.5 years, and after we graduated from college, we got married and we moved to Austin, Texas. And that's where we began our journey. And I just, you know, I loved this man. And so when we moved to Austin, I had wanted to become a school teacher. That's all I ever wanted to do. And Bill had a job that he liked. And so we just began that beautiful journey, you know, two people in love. I loved teaching is my passion. So God just said, "You're going to be a teacher." I love it. I loved it. And so, and Bill enjoyed his job. He really enjoyed it because he got to travel some. And he would come home from these trips and he would say, "Stephanie, guess what? They serve drinks on the plane." And I said, "Oh." And then he'd call and he'd say, "Guess what? We just had happy hour. Oh my gosh." And so Bill started buying beer and putting them in the refrigerator. And I had not seen beer in our refrigerator growing up, so I started to pay attention. Now, we had only been married a little while, and I already am on alert because this is behavior that I don't understand. And so, you know, I'm a counter. I counted them. You know, how many are you having? Is that too many? We had been married 3.5 years, and I became pregnant, and we had a beautiful baby girl. Her name is Laura. 21 months later, we had our son, Wes. Now I am so grateful. We have two healthy children, thank you, God, and I get to be a stay-at-home mom. So now my job is just to raise these kids and to please this man. And so, of course, you know, but I have to tell you, I look to Bill to make me happy. And so, of course, his drinking is continuing. I'm watching that. But I need my insides filled up. So I joined every organization there was. I was PTA president. I was the secretary of a social organization. I just tried so hard to, as the kids were growing up and Bill's drinking's escalating, and it was just trying to keep everybody, because you know what? I brought that sign from my mother's house that said, "We are fine, thank you very much." And I put it in our front yard because we are fine, thank you very much. And I will do whatever it takes to keep the peace. And that would have all been really nice, except that we had a daughter named Laura. Laura was born angry. She'll tell you that's not true. She said she was just fine till Wes was born. Okay, but anyway, she was messing up my picture. Every time I'd ask her to do something, she'd say, make me, you know, and she just, I say, jump, and she'd skip. We were in conflict from the time she was in kindergarten, when I tried to get her to wear a sweater because it was cold. Oh my gosh. I had no tools to deal with a daughter that had a strong personality. And I had taught school for 4 years. I thought I could do this deal. But Laura was a challenge. So I'm trying to get her to sit down and behave. And I've got Wes. Wes is like his mama. He just wants to, you know, make everybody happy. And he's trying to get his insides filled by the outsides also. So he's playing soccer and he's a baseball player and he took judo and, you know, he was just, and I'm the best mom you ever saw. I'm running up and down the field and I'm cheering him on, you know, and I'm trying to get Laura to sit down and be quiet and I'm counting Bill's drinks. And it was a very hectic place to in my home, you know, but I have to tell you this story about we had a border collie and her name was Flopsy. She's the most beautiful border collie you have ever seen. But Flopsy becomes pregnant. We've never had this experience before. And so everybody's really excited. And I decided to shampoo Flopsy before delivery day because I had nothing else to do, right? So I shampoo Flopsy. And then I remember some puppies run and dry, and sometimes you towel dry them. So I read on the bottle and it said, do not use on pregnant dogs. And I went, oh my gosh, what have I done? So I called Dr. Pigott, the vet, and I said, I used this shampoo on Flopsy and she's going to have puppies. And he said, don't worry, Stephanie. He said, it's a couple of weeks before the puppies come. Sure enough, about 2 weeks later, the first puppy was born and it was born dead. And I called Dr. Pigott and I said, I have killed this litter of puppies. And he said, don't worry about it. There's a lot of them in there. Sure enough, about an hour later, another puppy was born and it was okay. So I called Dr. Pigott and I said, Dr. Pigott, I did not kill all the puppies. We have a healthy one. He said, that's really good, Stephanie. And about another hour later, another puppy was born. So I called Dr. Pigott and I said, Dr. Pigott, we have two healthy puppies now. Over the course of that day, Flopsy had seven puppies. I called Dr. Pigott after every puppy. The last puppy that was born had trouble breathing. And I called Dr. Pigott and he said, do you have any alcohol in your home? Yes. And he said, well, put some on a spoon, put it in the puppy's mouth and massage it down the puppy's throat. I said, okay, I think I can do that. And he said, and then Stephanie, please sit down and drink the rest of that bottle. I had driven that man crazy, but I wanted you to hear that because that's how I was doing everything. It was like the weight of the world. It was my responsibility. I had to make sure everybody was doing good. And we were trying, we were a loving family and Wes was the best. And Laura, if I could just get her really and truly, you know what? I have to tell you this. I don't usually say this, but I just thought of this. Laura, I was a Brownie Scout leader and I had Laura in the Brownies and I thought that was so good. And one time we were having our Brownie Scout meeting and we were all getting ready to do something, arts and crafts. And I looked around and there wasn't any Laura. She ran away from the Brownie Scout meeting. She was 7 years old. I mean, my gosh, who does that? So anyway, that this same daughter of ours, had a jaw surgery. She was beautiful, but she had a protruding chin. And so when she was in high school, we had to have surgery for her because she was in the choir. And when she sang, her mouth sometimes would lock open. So we went in and they did jaw surgery and they broke her jawbone and they scooted it back and they wired her mouth shut. I love that part. But they had to do that. And so this is when I had my first moment of clarity. I am in that hospital room and our daughter is getting ready to have major surgery and Bill is not there. He's passed out at home. And for the first time in all these years, I realized I was doing this marriage and this family by myself. It was just like, I was just stunned to see how much I had been in denial of, we were a happy family and we're all doing great. I tried to make you believe that, but Bill was passed out at home. So after Laura got out of the hospital and got home and got starting to get well, I told him, I said, I can't do this anymore. I said, I love you too much to watch you kill yourself. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but I can't live like this anymore. You have to leave or you have to get sober. And he said, I'm leaving. And he said, if you, you know, I can't live with you anymore. And I thought, just go. So one of his friends from, look at the time. Okay. One of his friends from work called me and he said, I understand you kicked Bill out. And I said, Jerry, there's something terribly wrong with him. And I don't know what it is. And he said, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to take you to a meeting. Will you go with me? And so Jerry took me to my first Al-Anon meeting. I walked in there, and I told you how I showed up. Exhausted, ignorant, broken, scared. And I walked in, and you just loved me. And you said to me, you don't have to live like this anymore. And then you gave me the magic words. You said, you will never have to do anything alone again. We are here for you. And all we ask of you is go to meetings, read the literature, get a sponsor, and work the steps. And I cried. And I got me a sponsor. Because I knew that I couldn't live like this anymore. But then you told me the one thing I thought would break my heart. You told me it was a family disease, and that if I had raised children in my family, I had raised sick kids. And I thought my heart would break. And then you said you did the very best you could with the knowledge that you had. So let's start getting you well. Well, I got me a sponsor. Oh my gosh. Her name is Blanche. Blanche had been in Al-Anon for like 25 years. I didn't know that. I just fell in love with her. And she, when Blanche hugged you, you felt it from your head to your toes. It's my first experience with unconditional love. She just loved me. The gift she gave me, she had me sit with her at her house every week for an hour until I was through with the ninth step. During this time, this beautiful woman changed my concept of a higher power. I was afraid of God. I had that fear of making a mistake and thinking something terrible was going to happen. And I thought I had played by the rules. And our family was falling apart. So I don't know if I was mad at God, but I didn't think, this is what Blanche told me. Stephanie, did you know that God loves you no matter what? Did you know that you cannot earn it and you cannot make it go away? It's called grace. That's how much he loves you. And every time we would sit together, she would remind me of this beautiful higher power. He loves you so much, you cannot earn it, and you cannot make it go away. And I just sighed a big sigh. 2 weeks after I came to my Al-Anon meeting, Bill Butler called me and he said, Steph, I've been trying to sober myself up. I can't do it. I need help. So I came into Al-Anon on July the 24th. Bill came into AA on August the 6th. And we begin our spiritual journey. Oh my gosh, all I ever wanted was for Bill Butler to be sober, and I knew we would live happily ever after. You know what? That is not true. Bill did get sober, and he had a sponsor, and he was working the steps, and I had a sponsor, and I mean, we were going to meetings, and he would come back, and he said, we had an 11-step meeting. What'd y'all talk about? And I said, detachment. It was a beautiful place. We had a beautiful life. But then we had this daughter called Laura. She did not like a drunk daddy, but she really didn't like a sober daddy. And she was breaking rules left and right. So She's a senior in high school. She had broken some rule. We had grounded her. After she had been grounded for a week, she came in and she said she'd like to go see the University of Texas play baseball. She loves baseball. And we said, we got together and we said, you may go, but we need you home at 6 o'clock on Sunday. She said, okay, you got it. Laura went to that baseball game and she did not come home at 6 o'clock on Sunday. She didn't come home on Monday. She didn't come home on Tuesday. I am calling Blanche crying. Oh my gosh, Blanche, what am I going to do? And she said, Stephanie, God loves Laura more than you do. And I said, well, that's a good thing, because when I see her, I'm going to kill her. She's a senior in high school. I'm a teacher. Everybody graduates from high school. So I'm getting ready to get it going. And I go to a meeting and y'all said things to me like, what would you be doing if this weren't happening? And I, are you kidding me? It's happening. My daughter's out there. We've got to get her graduated and then I'm done. You know, we didn't know where she was. We didn't know what she was. I just wanted her out. I just wanted her to graduate. That's all I wanted. Well, I got in the car on that when I had gone back to teaching. I'd stayed home, gone back to teaching when the kids got older. I was getting in my car that Wednesday of that week, and I had this little voice, you know how you have it, that said, if what you're doing isn't working, try something different. And I thought, I've been trying to love Laura well, and it's not working. And so she calls me on Friday. She says, hi, Mom. She says, listen, I'm going to be home a little bit later. And I'm like, nothing had happened. And I said, Laura, I love you and you can't come home. And she said, what? And I said, I love you and you can't come home. This is one of those moments when God does for you what you cannot do for yourself. I had no idea how I said those words, but I did. And she's so angry. And I said, I love you. And I hung up. And then, of course, I cried. Bill walks in, said, I don't want you to come home. He said, was that a good idea? I said, I don't know. The next morning, I'm at my Al-Anon meeting crying. You know what? I have been crying for a year. I asked Blanche, why am I still crying? He said, Bill got sober. I've got you. We're working the steps. And she said, you are grieving the loss of a dream. You never thought that your family would be held in the grips of alcoholism, and you are grieving the loss of a dream. So I cried at every meeting for over a year, and I had permission, and I believe we have a lot of grieving to do. So anyway, I got to hurry. Laura was, she was gone. Bill Butler decided that we were going to find a place for her. He thought we needed a treatment center for a child that had anger management problems. Yeah, right. Well, we found one for her. So I found out she had walked over to Cherie's. And then I called her and said, if you want help, you know, what do I have to do? Anyway, we picked Laura up. We took her to a treatment center. I cried so hard. My daughter did not look like our daughter. She had been living on the streets. She had been beat up. She had been playing pool in pool halls. She had been sleeping in the parks. She looked horrible. I cried all the way to the treatment center. And all I thought was, you know what? At least now I know where she is. She was there 2 days and she called me and she said, Mom, I need to ask you something. And I said, what is that? And she said, how would you feel about me being an alcoholic? And I said, Laura, any 12-step program you want to latch on to will be just fine with me. This past April, Laura celebrated 35 years of sobriety. Can you believe it? Oh, my gosh. I still get goosebumps. You know, I just wanted her to graduate from high school. And God said, how about if we let her graduate by correspondence? And let's give her a 12-step program to live the rest of her life by. I would have cut it short. Blanche always says to me, why are you limiting God? Don't limit God. So, man, now Laura comes home and Bill and I and Laura standing in an open AA meeting, holding hands, saying the Lord's Prayer, and I'm just crying, you know, but oh my gosh, I just can't believe it, you know, and I think this is about the best thing that could ever happen. Wes graduates on time with his class, hallelujah. And so Bill comes home one day and he says, how would you like to move to Reston, Virginia? And I said, why would we? And he said, I'm tired of traveling. And so I said, sure, let's go. I didn't think we would go, but our house sold in 2 weeks. The houses in Austin were not selling, but our house sold in 2 weeks. God wanted us in Reston, Virginia. I told Bill I loved him and I was going to go with him, but I couldn't leave Blanche. I couldn't leave our children. I couldn't leave my, you know, Al-Anon group. And one of the guys that was in AA that I just loved, he said, Stephanie, you know what you have in Austin. Why don't you go see what they have in Reston, Virginia? Did you know that they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia? They don't do it right, but they have Al-Anon in Reston, Virginia. And so I found an Al-Anon group, Bill found an AA group, and oh my, I started teaching school in this little private school. Bill got a job that he loved. We were like on a second honeymoon. It was just wonderful. Then I get a call from Laura and she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what's that? And she said, I found Wes passed out last night. And I went, passed out? What happened? Bless his heart. She said, Mom, he was drunk. She said, I took Wes to his first AA meeting today. Oh my gosh, are we a family in recovery? Oh gosh, now when I go home, we're all standing there holding hands, saying the Lord's Prayer, and I'm crying. I just couldn't believe it. I was so grateful. Then I get another call from Laura, and she says, Mom, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I'm pregnant. I said, no, sweetie, you're not. She said, Mom, I'm going to have a baby. I said, no, Laura, first you have a wedding. Then you have the baby. We didn't have a wedding. You are not having a baby. She said, Mom, do you want me to have an abortion? I said, no. She said, do you want me to give it up for adoption? I said, no. She said, what do you want? I said, I want for you to not be pregnant. She was messing up this picture. I just couldn't, and I didn't tell anybody. I was just, how did that, she's sober. I mean, she was 24 years, how did this happen? She knew better, so I didn't tell anybody. Well, we were having big book studies in our house, and so one night they were leaving, and Rita came up, and I said, Rita, I need to tell you something. It's terrible. She said, what? And I said, it's really bad. And she said, what? And I said, Laura is pregnant. And she said, oh. I said, no, you don't understand. She's not married. And she said, Stephanie, why do you have to judge everything and find it lacking? Why don't you just say, it's what is? And you know what? The most beautiful baby girl you ever saw was born in June. Her name is Stephanie Grace. It was the happiest day of my life, and I would have missed it because I judged it and I found it lacking. We didn't need to have a wedding. We didn't need to have a marriage. We had a new grandbaby. You couldn't wipe the smile off my face. I was so excited. I just loved that child. Now I'm going to skip forward a little bit because, you know, this was years ago. Grace is in second grade. She's 7 years old, and the teacher asked everybody to please introduce themselves. My Grace stands up and she says, my name is Grace and I'm an alcoholic and I've got 7 years of sobriety. She had never heard anybody introduce themselves any other way. The teacher was horrified, called Laura, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, so now Bill and I are working and Laura and Wes are going to their meetings and now we've got a grandbaby. And then I get a call from San Antonio that tells me that my daddy had died with an abdominal aneurysm that had ruptured and he had died instantly. And so I adored my daddy. And I was so, it was hard. And you know what? I have to tell you, I am so grateful for this program. I had made amends to my dad, and he knew I loved him, and he knew, and I knew he loved me to the best of his ability. I was so grateful that I had nothing left unsaid because you had told me to work the steps. Now, I'm going to tell you the part of my story that I wish I didn't have to share. You know, this is, I've been told so many times, the one thing you can't change is the past. And I sure wish I could change this, but I can't. With 8.5 years of sobriety, Bill Butler could not live with his humanness, and he committed suicide. I want you to hear two things. AA works. Bill cherished his sobriety. He cherished his sobriety. Depression is an illness, and if it goes untreated, it will kill you. Bill had been on and off of antidepressants, and he was feeling so good that he took himself off. I went to see the psychiatrist, and he said, Stephanie, it was an instantaneous decision. He was insane for one moment. And if he could have lived through that moment, he'd be alive today. So I called Blanche, and she says, you need some outside help. But you know what? Y'all stayed to your word. You told me I would never have to do anything alone again, and I didn't. You were with me the whole time. And I went to see a counselor, and she said, I need to tell you what has happened to you. You have been traumatized. When something happens in your life and it changes in one instant, it is called trauma. When it will never be the same again, it's called trauma. And you've been traumatized. And you just need to be very gentle with yourself. She said, it's going to bring a whole lot of stuff. Not only are you grieving, but you are traumatized. I'm going to insert something right here. Bill died 28 years ago. He died on the 28th of February in 1994. What I've learned since then is how important it is to grieve. I have been doing that grieving for 28 years, learning how to live with his death. And now I understand it had nothing to do with me. A suicide is an insane instant. Because I kept saying, I should have known. No, not if he didn't want me to. There was nothing I could do. Anyway, so I called the children. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And Laura said, Mama, Daddy loved you too much. He would never go off and leave you. And Wes said, Mama, Daddy loved you. Daddy, how could Dad do that? And it's not about love. It's about a disease. So we brought him home to Texas and we buried him. And I decided that I wanted to stay in Virginia. I'm not even sure why, but I was the director of a little school with their extended care program. And I just felt like that's where I was supposed to be. And so Bill had been an excellent employee. But so after he died, there was this lump sum of money. We've never had money. We've lived from, you know, like everybody does. And they give me this lump sum of money. And I go, okay, I don't know. What are you going to do with that? I don't know. And so a friend of mine told me to invest it with this guy. So I did. And so, but let me tell you what happened. 2 years, almost to the day after Bill died, I walked into that house and I said, he's not coming home. It took 2 years for me to get the information from my head to my heart. He's not coming home. So I just called Laura and Wes and I said, you know what? I think I'm coming home. And they said, Mom, are you coming back to Texas? And I said, yeah, I am. And so the teachers were saying, where are you going to live? And I said, well, you know, in Virginia, you never get to see the sunsets because the trees are so tall. I want to see the sunsets. I love water. And I've never lived in a new house before. So I think I'd like that. And so God said, you got it, girl. So I live in a new house on Lake LBJ. And the sun sets over Pack Saddle Mountain right out my back door. Unbelievable. It was just marvelous. And so I'm moving home and the kids are here and we've got Grace and things are going so nice. Except the man that I had invested the money with was not trustworthy. And so Bruce stole almost $300,000. So now I am in a new home with no money and no job. And I am Laura is saying, Mom, get on your knees and pray for clear and concise direction. I said, Laura, I'm doing that. I am crying. This is like another death in the family. Bill had worked so hard, and I had given this money to a man that was told that he was trustworthy, and he wasn't. So here I am in a new house. No job, no money, and what am I going to do? Well, you know what God did? He built an elementary school 7 minutes from my house, and they needed a first grade teacher. And so I started teaching first grade 7 minutes from my house. Can you believe it? God just unbelievable. And to go back to Bruce, they told me that I needed to, you know, press charges against him. So he went to a prison for 2 years. That was the maximum they could give him. And then he's been ordered to make restitution. So not on any regular basis, I get a check for like, what first check was for $50. So I called Laura and I said, Laura, I'm getting some money. And she said, Mom, you're going to die before he finishes paying you off. Well, I didn't care about the money because guess what? God wanted me to teach school. I did what the AAs had taught me in those open meetings. I had been praying for that son of a bitch. And I just said, you know what? God bless him. And what I know is that today the money's gone and those kids walked across my soul. Every day for 17 years, I go to school just thrilled to death to be with those young people. And I've had just enough money. I am still living in that house. This is the house where I lived after Bill died and where I taught school. And so now I'm going to bring you up to date. Grace grew up and she's a grown woman. And one day we're together and she says to me, they call me Dash. I'll tell you about that another time. She says, Grandma Dash, I need to tell you something. And I said, what? And she said, I'm going to have a baby. And I said, isn't that wonderful? Oh boy, I'm going to be a great grandma. I had learned from Laura's experience that you do not judge and you do not limit God. And so Grace has a baby. Her name is Harper. She's 5.5 years old and she is the joy of my life. I am her great grandmother and she calls me Dash. I'm so glad I didn't judge that. Grace isn't married, but Harper's here and she is a delight. So I have been teaching school all this time. And finally, I have a knee that's bad. So I go to the orthopedic guy and he said, how tall are you? And I said, 5'2". And he measures me and he says, you're 4'11". And I said, what happened to me? And he said, you have been standing on concrete for 34 years and your disc have compressed. So Laura says, Mom, you're out of there. And I said, no, I don't want. So she goes with me to the retirement office and I sign the papers and I'm crying. And the lady says, "Late, most people are really happy when they're retired." And I said, not me. I love those kids. Well, I've been retired now for 8 years and it's okay to be retired. You know, I can still teach, but I just can't stand up for 8 hours a day. So I am retired. Teaching, still living in the same house. Laura has been married and then not, and then married and then not. And she is sober and she's doing Zoom AA like you've never seen. She just, she loves it. And Grace is Grace. Okay. So Laura is raising Harper right now. And so Grace is present. She's just not consistent. And so Laura and Harper, they just moved about 2 minutes from my house. And so that's all good news. Everything's great. Now, let me tell you about Wes. He is now, Laura's 53 years old. That really does age me. And Wes is 51. When his dad died, he could not live with this. He did not know what to do with that. So he was going to school at the University of Texas and he left. He went to Wyoming and he got on a horse and he just started riding. He didn't know what to do. He was sober, but he couldn't live with his dad's death. And so he got on that horse and he would send me a letter saying, Mom, I'm easy in my saddle. And I'd say, whatever it takes, sweetheart. But he's up there in Wyoming working on a ranch and the horse threw him and fell on top of him and Wes broke his back. And so Wes got hooked on OxyContin. So he had to get clean from that. He's fine today. He has pain, but he's okay. And I don't know if he's sober or clean. I don't even ask that anymore. He did go to AA for a while after he came off of the OxyContin, but today I don't know what he's doing. We don't talk about that. He comes out here and goes fishing when he can. But all I know is he knows that I love him and I don't care. He knows that as long as he's safe and he doesn't hurt himself or anybody else, it's his life. I just love him. So I'm going to backtrack for a minute. When Bill died, I was in Virginia and there was a lady sitting in Al-Anon meetings with me and her name was Dawn. And she called my house and she told whoever answered the phone, if Stephanie ever needs anybody, I'm here for her. So Dawn became my Virginia sponsor and Blanche was my Texas sponsor. So I was just doubly blessed. I would go sit on Dawn's couch and just cry. I did not know what to do with myself. Bill and I had been together 33 years. Now what am I supposed to do? So Dawn just helped me. And she would say things, don't we serve an awesome God? And she helped me restore my faith. I knew that Bill was sick. This wasn't a God thing. I didn't feel punished. I didn't think Bill was being punished. Bill was sick. He had been taking antidepressants, and if he had stayed on them, he'd be alive today, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. Y'all take it from there. Okay, so Blanche was in an accident, and she did not survive her injuries. And so I was holding her hand. Her daughter called me. And she said, if you want to say goodbye to my mom, you better hurry. And I got in the car and I was holding Blanche's hand when she took her last breath. And I said, Blanche, I hope you can see all the people that you have helped because you were willing to share. And I am so grateful for that woman. She loved me when I felt unlovable. And now I have Dawn in my life. Let me tell you about Dawn. She has been going to Al-Anon since 1964. She's so 60 some odd years. Her name is Dawn C. If you ever get a chance to hear her, she's 90 years old. She has macular degeneration. She goes to meetings. She lives by herself. She goes to meetings on Zoom all the time. And every time I call her, she says, are you in present time? I go, no, get in present time, Stephanie. That's where God is. And then she says, don't we serve an awesome God? And she and I sing in the morning. Neither one of us can sing, and we sing, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice. And I do feel that way today. You know, I have not one thing to complain about. Harper and Grace and Laura and Wes, and you know, we're just tiny little family, but we have the love of this fellowship that we have, y'all have sustained us through everything. Let me look. Okay. And I am so grateful for that. So Dawn and I call her every day, mainly because she's 90 and she lives by herself. But also I call her just because it's wonderful to hear her voice. And she's been with me all these years. And I'm grateful for that. I have two home groups that I go to. One is, well, they're all both in Marble Falls, which is about 15 minutes from my house. And one's Monday night at 7:30 and the other one is Thursday noon. And we're both of them are hybrid. And so I have been experiencing for over a year now what y'all are going through right now. And I'm telling you, it is wonderful for the folks that can't travel. And it's wonderful to see bodies in person and do the hugging that you can. So what I need to tell you, I'm going to read you one little thing out of Courage to Change because I'm a teacher and this is what I do. This is from Cahil Gibran. It's out of Courage to Change. It says, I would not exchange the laughter of my heart for the fortunes of the multitudes, nor would I be content with converting my tears into calm. It is my fervent hope that my whole life on this earth will ever be tears and laughter. And that's what I feel like. I mean, I've done a lot of crying, but I've done a lot of laughing. And so now that at this age of my life, I'm into the grieving of the fact that I am not young and spry anymore, but by golly, I'm grateful to be alive. And I'm grateful that y'all are here and that you let me share tonight. Thank you very much. First, well, I'm staying awake. It's 10 something for me. Y'all are way ahead of me. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you.